Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello, Egg Chasers, and welcome to the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. 1 second. We're in the rugby dungeon. I'm Tim. Phil is right there.
Hello, Tim.
And JB is somewhere en français. Where?
Bonjour, Tim. Bonjour, Phil.
Bonjour. Salut.
Bonsoir.
Bonsoir.
Ah, yes, indeed. It's not easy to play down the mixer, is it, Tim?
Well, not when you're about 4 feet away from it. No.
Tim, it's a fine art, which I've got it down to now.
Well, yeah, the fine art is that I speak while you do it.
Yes.
Yes, that is true. That's true. Although when I have to do it, when you're not here, I have to do my own introduction. Take a breath, rush over, bring it down and then come back.
Oh, there you go.
Difficult.
And Tim is not laying on the chaise longue like Kate Winslet in Titanic, like you frequently do, JB. So that makes it more difficult.
He is a professional. I thought Virgin Radio bought him his own chaise longue, not only for his change room, but also for his studio.
I insist on one. Whereabouts are you in France?
That's a great question. That is a superb question. And the honest answer is I don't know. I'm 1 hour away from Geneva, which I know is not in France. But I am definitely in France. And the resort is called Grand Massif, or Massif, or however you say it. So that's where I am. I'm in an all-inclusive, and I am piling on pounds. I've only been here 5 hours.
How much have you eaten in 5 hours?
Well, I'm not going to go through it all, because it would really take a lot of your time, but for lunch, two servings of steak, a serving of potatoes. I had some carbonara, then I had another sort of pastry bakey thing, then I had 3 beers, I had an espresso, and I had some sort of egg blancmange type chocolate thing, which was good, and a handful of pastries, and then some sorbet to finish.
Now, the big question for me is, on the all-inclusive, can you get a Negroni?
No, I cannot. So I am drinking currently some spritz type thing, which is like, can't really describe it. Lots of mints, but I have asked for a Negroni, and the answer is no. There are no Negronis here. Third world.
Well, obviously, on this podcast, we are going to be discussing the opening weekend of the Six Nations. And whilst I'm disappointed as an Englishman, this is my favourite time of year. And this is the best rugby competition on earth, bar none, isn't it?
I think.
Yes, international. I think the Premiership is pretty good as a weekly competition. But in international terms, yeah, this is it.
Yeah, I would agree. The most history, generally the most competitive and the most interesting. So, yes.
Right, okay. So, when we look at this, I've asked people to send questions and stuff in at Rugby Podcast on Twitter is where you can find us. Hit subscribe in that feed. We'll have loads of podcasts coming your way through this competition. We want to hear from you, hear your thoughts. But let's get into ours. And we're going to start with the game that was last and freshest in our mind and most painful for Phil and I to have watched as well.
Painful for who?
Painful for Phil and I, and you for your prediction as well. Your prediction of an England win.
Which prediction? Because I suitably hedge my bets.
Standard.
You often predict multiple different results.
Yeah, well, I've got to say, What an amazing result. And who would have thought it?
Well, I would say that Sean Edwards would probably say he saw that coming.
Yeah, I mean, what can you say about Sean Edwards? He's a defence coach. It should be easy, shouldn't it? It should be easy for anyone to say to those players, go out and tackle people really hard, consistently, over and over again, with ferocity. I mean, I could write that on, like, a PowerPoint or something. But he actually gets them to do it. I can't understand why he is different to everybody else.
Rugby league background, northern, very aggressive,
scary.
Yeah, but I mean, you could simply nip over to a shipyard in Barrow and get someone with a rugby league background who's northern.
Very true.
Before we get into this game, the one thing I want to say is there's an incredible amount of reactionary. I can't think of the word. There's an incredible amount of short. What's the word I'm thinking of? Very reactionary comments,
reactionary works well.
Very reactionary comments. Oh, Eddie Jones, he's lost the plot. Oh, Ben Youngs is the worst player ever. Owen Farrell's awful. What, George Furbank shouldn't play international rugby, etc., etc. And let's just remember, England played really badly and lost by 7 points in Paris. And away wins in the Six Nations are incredibly hard to get.
What is
going on in the background right now?
I'm just having kids run past.
Oh, I see.
Must be podcast fans. Must be. Unbelievable. Unless you're Wales and then you win Grand Slams consistently, in which case away games don't seem to be a problem. I wonder if the reactionary thing to say is England are world class, because I feel now really stupid. I feel really stupid for believing in England through the World Cup campaign. I said it through a group of stages. They played no one hard yet. They batter the All Blacks. They then get beat in the final. They've got to the final. So I have to say, yeah, they're quite good. They were terrible today. They were terrible. And they were beaten in exactly the way that I would say you can beat England. Because once you take their physicality off them, they've got nothing else.
In a game like this, with a team like this, I agree. I think there's certainly a couple of missing players in the Vunipolas who were massively missed in their carrying, and that's okay when you've got Manu Tuilagi at outside centre, because he can carry as well as anyone. But they didn't, when he went off so early after 16 minutes, they should, with hindsight, you can say they should have changed the game. They should have, possibly brought Genge on, possibly brought Ludlam on.
Devoto,
perhaps, for the big ball carrying the centre. Or that he's the next biggest, next best option. And they didn't.
But why don't you change the game completely? Because you've got the two beautiful distributors in Ford and Farrell. And do you know what? When Jonathan Joseph came on, I thought, this actually might work in England's favour, because they were under the cosh. Teddy Thomas had just broken them. Vaca Towers running riot. And I thought, Jonathan Joseph's defence is going to actually solidify England. And then if they could have got the other side of the ball right and got Jonathan Joseph, you know, in dangerous attacking positions rather than crash balling it, I think they'd have been much, much better.
Yeah, but they couldn't get that attacking position. Let me say that in a different way, actually, because they got those attacking positions multiple times. They had the lion's share of the territory, and they got 7 or 8 times into France's 22 by some intelligent kicking and a little bit of luck at times. But it was when they got there, they couldn't then bend the line to force the opportunities to then break the line. So they couldn't get the fast front foot ball that Jonathan Joseph or Elliot Daly or Johnny May or any of those outside backs could have worked with.
The kind of quick front foot ball that Manu Tuilagi and Billy Vunipola create.
And Mako. And you were looking for other people to step up into that carrying role, and
Courtney Laws was trying.
Courtney Laws tried, wasn't effective. Marrow wasn't effective. Sinclair really wasn't effective.
No, he had a really poor game.
His hands were poor, and when they were looking for him to carry, he seemed to just want to hit the deck like too fast. So he's hitting the deck 2 yards behind the gain line, which meant that the ball was even slower. So the lack of the ball carriers.
I think a team's got to be more more than just a handful of ball carriers, and if they're missing, you don't win. And, you know, there's got to be more to it than that. So, for instance, like, you look at the successful Wales teams that have won in the past, and they're not filled with talent, but they find a way to win by a scheming or plotting or something. And I just thought the England performance thing wasn't particularly good enough. And I think one of the things might be is I wonder if there's a World Cup final hangover. And not in a good way, not as in, like, you know, they're a bit tired and all that bit. I wonder if they kind of believed their own hype. They thought, yeah, we will show up to Paris and we'll win this because France aren't very good. It's a new team with a load of fresh lads. And we'll just strut in there.
No.
And we'll take care of business. Mauro Tocci, no. I've never seen Mauro Tocci have a bad game. He had a terrible game today.
I think that would be nonsense that there was any level of arrogance that they thought that. I mean, they played poorly, and we can talk about that, but to suggest that it's an attitude issue and that they took it for granted that they'd go to Paris and win, no way. That England have lost five of their last seven Six Nations games away from home.
It's
awful.
It is tough.
That's really dreadful.
I don't really buy the arrogance thing. I think Mauro had a bad game, a very bad game, possibly the worst I've seen him play. Exactly as you say, Jay. I'd actually go to something that we flagged last year and possibly even the year before in Downfall 2018. It was England's inability to adapt on the fly. And you saw... So Manu going off is one thing, but they were not getting the front foot ball. They were making basic handling errors, but they failed to do anything to rectify that. It was only really in the second half, after whatever's happened at halftime and after a couple of people were changed, so after Genge comes on and Ludlam comes on, that they managed to change anything. That first half, there was no change in performance despite doing so poorly, and that's the most frustrating thing from my side.
I just add to what Phil said, and just let's just put the context here. England didn't bring their A game at all, but they created so many opportunities that they butchered, and they lost by 7 points. They played, like we've talked about, we've never seen Mauro Tocci play so poorly. Carl Sinclair was really poor by his high standards.
Owen Farrell, the handling mistakes in the first half.
I mean, George Furbank, I'm not going to be someone saying, oh, that was a ridiculous selection. I'm fine with the selection. He did not have a good game.
Tom, anything with kids?
Yeah. Tom Curry, he did some great work around the park, packing down at 8. When the England scrum's going forward and you just want the control... It didn't have that. That's a basic fundamental of a number 8.
Yeah, 100%. So all of those things can be rectified.
Yeah.
And England lost by 7 points to a French team who we would talk about them saying they played brilliantly well. Their defence was really oppressive. Their back row were all over the place.
Lost by 7.
I'm just putting a bit of context around it, saying let's not doom monger it so much.
The other context would be right that if Johnny May didn't exist, you'd lost by 21 points.
24, yeah.
And if Johnny May could run as fast as Usain Bolt and was as big as the world's strongest man, we might have won. We do have Johnny May.
He nearly was. I don't think England played well at all. I think Eddie Jones got to hold his hands up and say, you know, what is he doing picking that team? We spoke about it last week. I mean, I don't know if you know this, boys, but every now and again I go and watch Sale Sharks.
Do you? Know that?
Yeah. I've been down a few times recently.
You should mention it.
And Tom, So Tom Curry, right, is a guy. He was not just an excellent player, right? He's not just good when you watch him on TV. But if you ask any of the players in Sale, like the first player that comes to mind is Tom and Ben Curry for how hard they train, how well they train, how good they are. And that's fine. But I just think, why on earth, when you've got this player who is so good and you've seen no evidence in their whole entire career that they could ever play 8, whether this be at the Premiership, in training, with their club, you know, in England camp, I mean, I've never seen it, and I've watched hours and hours of these boys play. And you give him his first ever game at 8 in Paris against France, That is madness beyond madness.
And let's just be clear, the only element of playing eight that is tangibly different from it playing seven or six, which is what he has played in his career, predominantly seven and occasionally six. The only thing that is different is the base of the scrums when you have the ball. Bigger point is that there was an absence of what Billy Vunipola brings and what Nathan Hughes has brought on very rare occasions, and what Alex Donbrandt or Nathan Hughes or Joe Simmons or Ben Earl or Tamana Harrison could have brought, which is,
well, I think
the gain line success.
I think we're confusing two things there, aren't we? There's the gain line. I wasn't too worried about his overall work rate because, as I always say with number eight, if you can't get a big carrier, get big work rate.
Yep.
Tom Curry will bring that in spades. Not a problem with that whatsoever. But you know, those three or four big moments, I mean, that can turn a game, particularly when it's a high pressure situation, scrum whatnot. The thing with Tom Curry, which I really don't get, is if this was your idea, right, and you'd thought about this long and hard, why didn't you give him 15 minutes at the end of a game in the group stages in the World Cup? Why has this not been discussed? Why give him his first start with no one on the bench to cover him, except for Ludlam, which, interestingly, he didn't actually even come on at eight. Ludlam has played eight.
I'm just going to stick up.
I
understand. I agree. I agree, broadly speaking. But I'm actually just trying to anticipate what Eddie Jones's thought process is that the base of the scrum, attacking ball, as long as the scrum does its job, shouldn't be too big of a deal. There was a couple of poor moments. And Michael Checker...
But the scrum was awesome.
Michael Checker, or whoever it was Australian coach at the start, did this exact same move for David Pocock, and no one was going, what's he thinking of? How could he do it?
Yeah.
So I think that actually it's two separate things. Tom Curry messed up a couple of things at the base of a scrum, fine. But the bigger problem was the gain line that we've talked about, which was just purely as a consequence of that selection.
And the other big thing, which we kind of briefly mentioned, was just the number of basic errors. So there was basic handling mistakes. Owen Farrell and Furbank were a couple of blatant ones in the first half with no real pressure on them. And then the number of times, particularly in France's 22, where England carry the ball in and just fail to secure their own ball when they're tackled and it gets turned over and France play out, or Boutier, the 15, puts in a 90-metre kick. Those kind of mistakes are... They kill you in a game like this, but they are correctable. You will make those mistakes infrequently enough for them to be correctable. And they got grouped together in this game, and they all cost... Just another disappointing thing from my side was France seemed to react faster. So every time there was one of those mistakes, the ball... And I think it was more than just luck for France to react so consistently better. The ball always seemed to end up in French hands. And they just seemed that... Either have that desire or those split-second faster reactions so that any England mistakes were capitalised on by France. And that was... I don't know if it's desire. I don't know if it was the sharpness. I don't know if England were tired or rusty or what.
I mean, that is, isn't it, a classic example which any coach will tell you about. Just the French wanted it more. That first half, the French just wanted that game far, far more. It was enthusiasm. And the weird thing about it all is, look at how we built this game up. Is, you know, we don't really know what the French are. The French being French, they'll bottle it in some way, and they nearly did towards the end. Very young team. And this England team, let's make no bones about it, is one of the more experienced England teams that they've ever had. You know, you'd expect them to deal with it comfortably.
Yeah. I disagree. I disagree that any team which would expect to deal with France comfortably in Paris. And everyone was talking about this being a young and inexperienced and experimental French team. Bollocks. No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't.
It was a little.
They had a new cap at fullback. Rates hasn't played loads of international rugby. In fact, that wasn't his debut on the wing, was it? He's played before.
No, he's played before.
No, it wasn't.
No, and...
Played quite a lot, to be fair.
And... So you tell me where else the real inexperience was in that French team.
Front row didn't have a huge number of caps.
Your two locks.
What are you talking about?
Olivon is
Willem's
pretty young.
Olivon, 27.
Olivon, but he's not hugely capped. He had a bloody good game.
He did, didn't he?
In terms of the number of caps, so France did have far less, by far the lowest of any team. Sorry, fewest. Good point. Far fewer caps. They had 299 caps. Compare that to England, who are 813.
Yeah.
Wales were the most capped this weekend, over 900 caps. So they had experience in some positions, but not right across the board. But
yeah,
you are right to point out how well how good this French team is. And it's interesting, I watched the Eddie Jones press conference just before I came here, actually. It had just been put up. And Eddie Jones was in his usual kind of defensive mode, as he is. He's always good value when England win. He's always good value when England lose. But he did, on a number of occasions, say, you're focusing too much on England. France were brilliant in this game. And the biggest thing that France did very, very well, Jay, you highlighted it before, was their defence. And their defence forced those turnovers. Yeah. They forced the errors. And England, particularly in the 22, they kept doing simple things, expecting France to crumble. And instead of France crumbling, England crumbled and the turnover was forced and they were 90 metres back on their own try line.
Yeah, and England did not score one designed try. Oh, hang on, did they? Was it just two Johnny May tries?
It was the two Johnny May tries.
Yeah, I mean, that one kick is just a random Johnny May kick that could go into the stands, it could go behind him, you know, it could kill a ball boy. You don't know where that's going. And, you know, fine. I mean, that's just a good bit of skill, well executed. The second one, when he weaves through, there's maybe Johnny May, Josh Adams and Teddy Thomas in all the Six Nations that can possibly do that.
Yep.
And that would worry me that there's no real design to how England scored their tries.
Yeah, I'd go with that because it did. I felt England were clueless when they got into positions and then were just expecting France to crumble and France didn't.
Yeah,
and something we've
France were marching them back.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Some of the France defence was brilliant, but that probably comes onto a point that we've not mentioned, and it's the performance of the two scrum halves.
Yes.
Yes, quite.
The only two scrum halves, or the only two full cap senior scrum halves in the England squad. There is an apprentice in there, in Mitchell from Northampton. But it just feels like, I mean, we all said it after the World Cup final. We've said it a number of times before that. But this game really seemed to highlight the weakness that England have. Ben Youngs has got 95 caps, 96 caps, I think it is. Mm. Hugely, hugely experienced player. And he's had some brilliant games in an England shirt. I've not seen it for a good couple of years now. Do we think anything different will happen there?
Well, if you want to pick up on what Eddie Jones's mood might be in terms of what he thinks of his own selections, not on the Ben Jones one, but just to sort of pick up where Eddie Jones's mind is at, he said, and I quote, "Tom Curry is a long-term project at eight. We think he has a lot of potential in that position."
Yeah, he said that
that's
in his press
madness.
Conference.
He said that in his post-match press conference.
Sorry, that is utter madness. He mustn't watch him play. He just must not watch him play. There is nothing that suggests that Tom Curry can ever be a proper eight. He can fill in there. He can do that Pocock role. He can do all sorts of bits and pieces. Marvelous player. He is. If I was to count the players at Sale Sharks, right, until recently, he's probably the fourth one. The fourth one that Steve Dowman would call up to be number eight. It's ridiculous to think that this is his international position. And it's not because he's bad or he can't do it. It's also because of the fact that he's one of the world's best flankers, and there's a load of good eights. What is he thinking? It's remarkably stupid. Remarkably.
So I wouldn't be getting your hopes too high up. Alex Donbrandt or Sam Simmons.
Or Nathan Hughes.
Or Nathan Hughes or Taman Harrison. Bernal maybe, but it doesn't sound that way. So
no. If anything, the change... So I listened to that and I think the change that we'll see in the back row is we will have a third seven in there, or I think there will be, you won't see three locks starting again. I think we will, unless it's terrible conditions, I think we will have maybe Ludlam starting, maybe Ben Earl starting, but I think we'll continue to see Ben Curry at eight, but with two workhorses alongside him, more explosive.
Yeah. What worries me about this is, and I just want to come back to Ben Youngs in a second, but what worries me about this is there is this, and I can't prove it, it's never been on record, but when Eddie Jones gets himself in a hole with a player who's not doing well, he goes one of two ways. He bins them immediately, or he sort of doubles down. He did the same with Brad Shields, who was mysteriously in the England squad for God knows how long. And I wonder if he's going to do the same with Tom Curry. Look, it's not worked out, so I'll just carry on with this to prove that I was right.
I really think he will.
Jay, mate, is your battery for the computer down here? Is that it there? Hold on.
Sorry?
Your charger.
Hello?
Hello, I'm here.
Hello,
I'm just,
mate.
I just need to charge your computer. It's saying battery low. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Cool. The scrum half decision is an interesting one because, again, we've got probably the world's best scrum half at the moment, Antoine Dupont, who...
He was brilliant.
...did the basics but added a real bit of spark and a couple of important moments for France. And Ben Youngs was, like very laboured. Willie Hines wasn't really able to change the game too much when he came on.
No,
a couple of nice little lift passes to George Cruz, but
it's more of the same, really. Because for every one of those lift passes, so to do the lift pass, you've got to pick up and you've got to look for the options.
Yeah.
Problem with that is you can get caught with the ball, and for every nice lift pass, he got caught with the ball once. But Dupont was super. What we'd do for Baptiste Seran, who didn't even come off the bench, who's a brilliant scrum half.
If they don't want him, we'll just have Machinot.
Machinot, I'll take him. Morgan Parra, I'll take him. God, Dupont, apart from the kick with 1 minute to go, where he boots it out behind him for a 5-metre England scrum, it's totally irrelevant in this game.
Well, in this game, yeah, but if England end up winning the championship because of a bonus point.
Yeah, yeah.
Can I just say, that kick reminded me of something which Tim told me a while ago.
Go on.
So, it looked like a ridiculous decision at the time, right? Kicking it dead. And it was a ridiculous decision, because I'm sure he thought the game was over, right?
Yeah.
But, there's only a minute on the clock. He's booted the ball out. And it reminded me of the story, because didn't you lose a cup final, Tim? Because he went for the sticks rather than going for the corner. And the theory was going for the corner would waste the time. I thought, actually, with a minute on the clock, resetting a few scrums, they've got to score, then they've got to get the ball back, and then they've got to kick it again. So I'm sure he didn't want to do it. But it actually wasn't a terrible decision.
Well, yeah, because it actually did. By the time that scrum...
With the reset.
With the reset was over, the clock was red. So it meant that, that it was impossible for... England to actually win, albeit possible to get a bonus point.
Yeah, so you got 5 seconds, you got a minute to wait. You got the first 5 to 10 seconds of people just being astonished that Dupont's doing that. Now, if Dupont can continue to celebrate winning the game for another 10 seconds, that's 20 seconds gone automatically. Then you've got to get the ball back, and you've got to march the front rows over. It's not actually an awful decision. It is an awful decision, for the record.
We will return to England and France because there is much to discuss, but we'll do that in the context of looking ahead in a moment. But
yes,
Stuart Hogg. Come on, let's just go there. I mean, can you imagine what he was like? First game as Scotland captain. He's got his new hairdo again. Did you know he's had two hair transplants?
Has he?
Yeah, he had a hair transplant, then he bleached it, which killed the roots. So he had to have another hair transplant, and he's going to have a third hair transplant now because he'll have been pulling his hair out in bed over the weekend. My word. I feel really sorry for him. But, I mean, that's what he's there to do.
I know. And he had a great game besides that, and he was so fired up, and I loved his energy, and I think that had a big impact on the team, on the Scotland team.
Yeah.
Because so this is another game. So Scotland lost this by 7 points. They get a losing bonus point, same as England. Scotland will be much happier in general about this 80-minute performance
yes.
than England, even though some of the basic errors are almost identical, because Scotland repeatedly got into Ireland's 22 yep. and repeatedly turned the ball over.
You're absolutely right.
But Hogg, oh my God, that was... It's sickening. It's absolutely
yeah, well, we really
sickening.
Just... And I love the way that he... They carried on celebrating. They went through a phase of this, didn't they, in about, I don't know, 2005 or whatever it was, which is players would score and then celebrate so no one would check it.
Like a boxer
and he knows
at the end
got,
of a fight yeah, trying yeah. to sway the judges.
Yeah.
But he knows it's going to get checked. And why didn't he just come clean?
he was hoping it wouldn't get checked. There's a 1-2% chance that that's not going to get checked, and he was banking on it. You've got to roll the dice.
You see that is the kind of gamesmanship and play acting that I'm actually okay with. but let's just talk about Johnny Sexton, who also captain for the first well not for the first time, but permanent captain for the first time. Leading his team out. They got the win in Dublin, but he brought shame on himself and his countrymen. There is no way of proving Ooh. It. There's no way of proving it, but I'm telling you, at age 34, and one of the best players on the planet, to do what he did and try and, well, I don't know what he was trying to do, but pretending he'd had like his jaw broken, I'm going to stop short of saying he was cheating, but it looked like cheating. It looked like it was potentially pathetic.
So I would be a little bit softer than that. I hate the way he did it, actually, which is he kind of sits up looking to see if the ref's looking and then holds his jaw.
Then goes down holding yeah. his jaw. And then when the ref says, no, nothing, he stops holding his jaw, gets straight up.
He did. So having watched the replay and seen the slow motion, he did take a whack on the... on the neck jaw area from Hamish Watson, who is a bloody strong boy.
Yeah, he is.
He hit him bloody hard. So part of me has some sympathy because it probably was an illegal hit and you kind of want the referee to do something. But with that said, it obviously hadn't hurt Sexton, or certainly not sufficiently for him to be holding his jaw initially until he thought the referee was looking. So that bit is...
That's the bit I didn't yeah. like. Really didn't like. I've stopped short of saying it because it could have been, he could have genuinely been hurt, and it took a few seconds to register. That's not how it looked.
I'm not going to be so kind. Actually, I mean, if he continued to hold his jaw after the ref had said, "Yeah, nothing," I'd go, "Yeah, maybe he did hurt his jaw."
Yeah,
but he didn't, did he? You know, it was cynical, and it's cheating. It's certainly gamesmanship. It's just not a cool look. You know, the guy, it's like Simpson's best, one of the best players on the planet. Why go there? Why bother?
I know, and because besides that, so he scored
all
19 of Ireland's points.
Yeah,
he was very good. He was very calm and cool and got Ireland into the right places when they needed to be, right parts of the field. And he's tried brilliantly, which was a lovely bit of inventive kind that got England, I think. God, why didn't we have something like that in all? Why were we unable to have that? It was just a little... I think it was Furlong who stood at first receiver, popped to Furlong, the loop, and then out the back to Sexton. And it actually, if you watch it again, that little quick off-the-cuff move, I think it must have been a pre-planned call, but not pre-planned to do it at that moment in time, it actually created a three-man overlap. It was a three-on-one. So had been tackled, there was two men outside him who would have just walked in. It's a really, really nice little bit of play.
What do you think?
Very, very interesting. Sexton 28. So, Paul, injury? Maybe not. Maybe there. But then, I guess, England, Dylan Hartley was captain for the first 2 years under Eddie Jones. They go to a World Cup without him. So it's not... It's not absolutely essential. Is he the best leader right now in that team right now? Who's definitely going to be starting?
Exactly. That's the point. Definitely going to be starting. Because the other not definitely starting. It yeah. might be Conor Murray, definitely start. Who else are the contenders that would definitely be starting? I'll think of any.
Off the top of my head, I don't Henderson, have a guy.
Henderson.
Yeah.
But let's say a lock or two has a storm in.
Ryan,
if you put in a few, yes, but so I understand it. I understand it. Ryan will possibly be the captain.
So there's a little bit of the French team, a little bit of Tom Young's in here, which is, I just wonder if giving Sexton a rugby team, it's so hard for a young guy to step up in as captain, but it wouldn't be that hard for Johnny Sexton to step up to support whoever it is, whoever else it is as captain.
I'd thought that, and I think there is another match, obviously, captain, so the team move on, and I think that's right, so he was BA Finn through the leadership, but he has to attribute him. Kind of definitely your point.
Johnny Sexton, he might be any player.
Big shout, actually.
But not me. I found the interesting entry side. They're both in a class.
And was helped out at the right times by Sam Johnson. Outside him, had a great game.
Sam Johnson just brings things. Just, I don't know what it is. He picks the right lines. On the bigger stage, he plays very well. And who was 13? Was it Hugh Jones?
Hugh Jones, yeah. Who did some good things. He was quiet overall, but did well.
I mean, I think that's the sort of combo that Scotland need. That's exciting.
Yeah.
Like, they are far, far better when they go out and just take the game for teams.
I agree that Scotland deserves some credit, and I actually thought it was a more balanced Scotland performance than just, as you say, going and taking it to teams. It was quite a... They kicked when they needed to, when it was right to. They got themselves into the right positions. They just didn't apply the pressure and finish it when they got there.
Yeah, and they're pack fronted up, which gave them that balance because they've got the dynamism in the backs. They've got a bit of excitement, but their pack gave them a platform to work off. It's just... Sorry, I was just going to say, they'll be so frustrated that... I think it was 8 times they got into the 22 and failed to come away with points, which is...
It just makes the whole World Cup thing even more mind-boggling.
Yeah, it does.
Mm.
Why can...
It's unbelievable.
Why can... Because there are a few new faces in this team. Haining at number 8, who did pretty well.
By the way, he was not anywhere near Bristol's back row.
Yeah.
So they tried to convert him to a hooker. Then he went to...
He's 6'4", isn't he?
No, he was an auxiliary hooker for Bristol last year. I think he played more at... If it's the guy I'm thinking of, I think he played... They were playing him at hooker.
Bloody hell. He's 18 and a half stone, so he can play front row.
Yeah, but I'm absolutely certain he was signed as Edinburgh as a body. And there he is, starting for Scotland.
And playing pretty well.
He played well.
Like a concussion boy.
Yes,
good concussion boy.
But a number 8 who is used to playing number 8 did all right on the international stage. Wow, what a thought. Right, we got 2 big matchups left to talk about. We'll get on to Wales-Italy in just a second. The other one was BBC versus ITV. Who won that one for you? We've had quite a few people asking the question.
It has to be ITV. In my opinion, I'm not sure about Pugacha instead of, say, Bayfield or
Doyle,
yeah, Craig Doyle or Sarah Elgin. But besides that, there's a few BT members there. Driscoll and Wilkinson were very, very good, and of course Nick Mullins is brilliant, always, and then. God, the England panel, the panel for England and France today just felt confused. So 3 Englishmen and 1 Frenchman. Castagnier was great.
He loves Nigel Ray, doesn't he? Castagnier loves Nigel Ray, but maybe as much as JB.
He was a bit too positive.
Nearly.
A bit too positive, seemingly without understanding some of the facts. And that was what came across, that he's read maybe a Stephen Jones column. And that's it. That's it.
And he's but anyway, if we wanted to call him, we could probably get him on the landline at his St. Albans house that he's staying in tonight. We'll see.
I thought I always like Castagnier.
Yeah.
I thought Hartley was good value.
Yeah, he was.
I thought Guska and Johnson just added nothing at all. Not a single thing. In fact, they just took away from those two being pretty interesting. So they dragged the whole thing down. So yeah, I much prefer the ITV.
Yeah, I can't say either way because I didn't see the first game. I watched both games, but they were on in the club.
Yeah.
And I was rather drunk and the sound was down. So I've actually not watched any broadcast with the sound up. Oh. So I have no idea what the commentary crew was. Who did the ITV game?
I just want to add, I think Dylan Hartley has been absolutely brilliant since he's retired. He's loosened up. I saw him speaking doing an after dinner thing. And his Instagram stories have been amazing. He did a whole rundown of the England 15, and I'm trying to find. Let me try and find them. But he did the whole England 15. I will get them. I made a note of them. Oh yeah. So for example, Sam Underhill. If he wasn't whacking people on a rugby field, he'd be on a gap year somewhere, dressed in fair trade hemp clothing. It sometimes looks like Chuck Norris has roundhoused him through a charity shop, but if you look closely, he's got a lovely Rolex or Bremont watch on his wrist. Slightly contradictory.
Oh,
hardworking, nice. Hard-nosed, uncompromising, and has lovely manners. Exactly what you want from your flanker. So there was lots of. He did a rundown. He called. George Ford, he said, integral to how the team prepares and plays, one of England's genuine leaders, and he coaches the attack daily. When he's not doing analysis or preparing meetings, Eddie Jones has him in the gym doing extra bicep curls so he can fill his shirt better. Allergic to sunshine, so I hope the red rat didn't get too burnt in Portugal. So Dylan Hartley, retired, is great value at the minute.
I quite liked his line. Sorry, go on, Jake.
I was going to say, about newly retired players, okay, so here is my general rule, is we need more players doing more comms more often, because when you get to a stage where you're a player moving into the comms world, you try really, really hard to do a good job, and therefore, you normally do a really good job. The problem comes when your number is stuck in a producer's phone and has been for the past 10 years, and you just mail it in. So, I think it was Wigglesworth that did something a few weeks ago for BT, and he was absolutely ace because he spent the time to research the whole thing and make sure that he knew exactly what he was talking about. You look for the big games, the BBC, sometimes ITV do, and they roll out these guys. They just don't care. They were there to get a paycheck. Gus Scott is 100% one of those guys. So it doesn't surprise me that Hartley's doing well, because Hartley will be looking at this thinking, I want a bloody career. You know, I've got to try hard. Whereas the other guy's like, well, I've already got a career. You know bloody Brian Moore. I don't tell me that he's thought anything original about rugby for the past 20 years. He hasn't. He's still living off the time when he played.
With Brian Moore, at the very least, on a day like today, he should have given it a, oh, for God's sake! but he didn't even do that.
No. I'll tell you, another one who... First time I've heard him doing comms, there were some ups and downs, but overall I think I liked him, was Michael Checker. He did the... The Wales-Italy game.
Oh, yeah, mate. Great of footy, mate. Footy.
There were times where he was like overly negative and overly dour, but he did also add some interesting insight as to how he's seen Wales play in the past. When
how
he's
to take
been,
a loss?
I thought he added something pretty good, pretty different, and it always surprises me because he's a big boy. He was a number 8, wasn't he, when he played? It always surprises me just how high pitched his voice is.
Who, Checker?
Checker, yeah.
Wasn't Checker a hooker? I always thought.
No,
I thought he was a hooker.
He played in the same team as Eddie Jones when Eddie Jones was a hooker.
I think he was a back rower. Yeah,
I'm sure he was
six
a back rower.
Six or an 8. I thought so.
Again,
I might be wrong.
So let's just have a quick look.
But you're right. His voice.
Yeah.
Yeah, mate.
Go on.
Player.
But no, for me,
play number 8.
Yeah, play
number 8 for Australia at under 21 levels.
There you go.
More than 300 games for Ramwick.
For me, ITV wiped the floor, and I don't care about the adverts because it's the quality, not the. It's the quality, not the quantity, and I'd take 4 minutes less every now and again to go and get a beer in or a brew in and have really,
exactly right,
really top-notch stuff. And so just on a personal preference, ITV.
Yeah, I would probably agree with that, just because I've seen the ITV stuff in the past. It's much, 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 much better. I completely agree with that. The BBC stuff is just relics, frankly.
Yes, they keep rolling out the same old.
Oh,
people.
Hang on. Although there was one thing which really upset me. Someone decided to refer to Faf the Clerk, Faffy, who's one of the best scrum halves probably on the planet, as dressed up like a middle-aged crafts judge, which obviously I felt was completely disrespectful and not funny in the slightest.
Middle-aged judge at crafts. I also saw him described as a beautiful looking like a beautiful Shetland pony.
Again, I do not find this funny. I do not endorse it. I have nothing but the utmost respect for Faf the Clerk. You won't get a laugh out of me. A cheap laugh.
It was astonishing. So, Claire, my wife, came into the room while Faf was on TV. And she's like, what has he done to his hair? Is it always like that? I was like, yep, that's him. One of the best rugby players in the world. He looks like that.
Yes. And also, I mean, I've got fairly fair hair. And I know that I've got quite a similar complexion to Faf the Clerk. Do not wear beige. Beige does not work with fair hair and your skin tone, Faf. It didn't look good.
Fair play.
His guns look good under that rib jumper, though.
Yes.
I think you're all wrong. I think Faf did marvellous. He was dressed perfectly. It couldn't be more perfect. It was more perfect than any call to any ambassador in Ukraine. It was a perfect, perfect display by Faf the Clerk.
I'll tell you who was perfect sartorially this weekend. Andy Farrell.
Oh, yes.
He looked awesome.
First time I've seen him in a suit, I think. He's always wearing tracksuit and polo. Yeah.
Black suit, like JB, did you see it? Black suit, and he's in good nick.
Yeah.
He's in very good nick. He's deep, like he's got depth to his body, which meant he just wears that jacket really well. And white shirt, couple of buttons undone on it. He looked great.
So,
not wearing that for the photo shoot, Six Nations?
He was wearing it during the game. On the pitch.
Was what? He? You mean he doesn't get a different outfit for different games like people on the red carpet at the Oscars? This is an outrage.
He should do.
Maybe he's wearing the same outrage suit for climate change like Joaquin Phoenix.
So, a good friend of mine...
Maybe he's only wearing vintage suit, like Hilton.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
To save the planet.
Is it Nicky Hilton?
Nicky Hilton,
She'll only wear vintage Chanel, which is fair play to her.
Yeah.
The sacrifices of these superstars, mate.
So, a friend of mine, this is on from Farrell, he's my age, so mid-30s. His old man is, I think he's pushing 70 now, but my pal has never beaten him in a running race. His old man is still way fitter than
him. Wow.
My friend's run a number of marathons, but he cannot beat his old man. And I think that...
Harry Goring.
Not Harry. Harry Goring might be the same, actually, but another.
He's the same. Sure he is.
Harry Goring has not run several marathons.
No, he has not. Track miles. Anyway, it doesn't matter. No one knows his name.
But I can just see. So Andy Farrell will still bench more than Owen Farrell. He'll squat more than. He'll deadlift more. He can run faster. He can run farther. He can just do everything better than Owen Farrell. Still.
Do you know what Dan Scarborough used to complain about?
No.
Dan Scarborough used to complain about his hands being sore because Andy Farrell passes the ball so hard.
Farrell was an unbelievably good rugby league player. Unbelievable.
I went to Andy Farrell's first ever game of rugby union. I think it was Luton that they played?
Oh, so back when he joined Saracens in about 2006, 7?
Not Luton, Vicarage Road,
Watford.
Yeah, I made my then-girlfriend, now-wife, drive me all the way to Watford so I could... I mean, he missed the first half, which is fine because he didn't get on the first half. He came off the bike. I can't remember what position he played. I think he might have come on a flanker. He did come on a flanker. Yes, he did. And he did absolutely nothing. Complete waste of time. So we went all the way to Watford to watch it.
If they'd have been commentating on it like they commentated on Sam Burgess's first game, it would have been... They'd have found something that... to big him up about.
Did,
Well, he's still with the England team.
Am I making this up, but did in the Sam Burgess in his first game, was it Quins against Bath?
Yeah.
Or Bath against Quins? Did they have the big shot of the game playing? Did they have like a little sub window of Sam Burgess warming up, or have I just totally made that up?
He came off the bench, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, they did.
He came off for about 20 minutes.
They had loads of shots of him warming up.
The in-screen shot.
Yeah. And then Sam Burgess was just a generic body in a ruck. It was, and someone did a wonder snipe. Oh, the gap opened up there by Sam Burgess's rucking.
He's in a ruck.
Generic body number 4 in the ruck.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Oh, dear.
Off the Six Nations.
Sorry, go on.
I think have we covered off the Six Nations?
Well, we've not said anything about Wales and Italy.
Yeah, so one question which leads into that is Eddie Jones wouldn't say so in a press conference, but if he was really, really honest with himself, do you think he would have spent Saturday evening, maybe having a little whiskey or a sake, maybe in his hotel room, watching the highlights again of the Wales game or whatever, and thinking, why didn't I select Nick Tompkins in my squad?
I don't think he thinks like that. I think he's too forthright in his opinions to have them change. I think he's decided that Nick Tompkins wasn't for him, and that will be that.
And I think, given the options that England have got at 13, with Tuilagi, JJ, and Slade. Even Elliot Daly, if you need to,
mm-hmm.
I don't think Tompkins would push into that team. But given the opportunity, he is a very, very good player. So given the opportunity on the highest level, he can show his quality, and he did. I thought it was a much better option when he came on than having North at 13. North is good and direct at times, but in 13, his decision making is not good enough. And the two times that stick out in my head, one where he tried to go on an outside arc outside his 13 and basically just ate up all of his winger space and ran into touch. And another one where he tried a little pass, little offload to, I think it was Josh Adams at the time, and passed it forward into touch. And just, he's not quite there. Whereas Tompkins looks great. He's a 13. He's a great 13.
He's a good 13 and he's a good 12. He was the best centre in the Premiership in the last year.
In terms of tries scored?
Except for Brad Barrett.
In terms of metres made, tries scored, defenders beaten.
Yeah.
In terms of all attacking stats, he has been the best centre. And just by my eye, watching a lot and working at a lot of Premiership games over the last season, for me, he was the best centre in the Premiership. I really, really disappointed. Before the weekend, when the squad selections were made, I was really disappointed he wasn't involved in the England squad. I can understand it, but he's great attacking skills. He can do the rough and tough stuff. He can do a 12 job and batter away like in a Brad Barrett kind of style, which I know you love, JB. And I think we saw how good he is. The fact that he looked like he'd been there in amongst that group of people and in amongst that squad and in that environment for years.
Now, gutted. Yeah. Do you think he will start next week? So Wales have to go to Ireland, go to the Aviva, which will not be easy. If it was up to me, I would start him.
I would start him 100%.
I would have started him this week. I said that last week.
I think I would start him as well. It's not one of those situations, is it, where you have a settled team. In fact, you're ripping up most of everything. You're starting again. You want to put your own stamp on the team. George North at 13 is not a sustainable option by anyone's stretch. Tompkins is at 13. 100% agree with you. Go with Tompkins.
And I wonder if that decision might be taken away from him, because McNichol took a bit of a bang early on, came back on, and then I'm not sure he was 100% fit. So I wonder if it becomes a very easy decision. But even if it wasn't, if McNichol's fit, I mean, I know George North got the try at the end, but... Yeah, I would probably start McNichol and Josh Adams.
The interesting call will come when maybe game three, when Liam Williams is available again.
Interesting. Yeah. I would put him straight to 15.
So I don't think you can tell anything about Wales from this result, because they were playing Italy. Not to be too disrespectful to Italy, they're still Italy. And we won't find out anything until, I mean, I think Ireland will probably be a fairly good test. The only thing I know for sure, and I knew this before, is Josh Adams is legitimately brilliant.
Yeah. How was he let go?
It's amazing, isn't it?
He's so good.
I mean, at some point, domestic Welsh rugby has to catch up with the national team. It can't last forever. I mean, we've got this weird sort of dual reality where Wales are basically happy because the national team does well, even though they are garbage lower down. How long can it last? How long can they let players... the quality of Josh Adams' goal, and not be held accountable.
Well, Wales under 20s lost to Italy for not the first time. I think it's two or three in the last 3 or 4 years they've lost. They've lost to Italy. So that, along with letting players like Josh Adams go, that's a worrying sign,
isn't it?
But then I guess
also the fact that they win no games as well.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a bit more of an obvious sign, I guess, isn't it?
Well, both indicators. But then I guess if you can bring in lads like McNichol and Tompkins, then what do you have to worry about? You don't need to create your own talent. Just let other people do it.
Agreed. Yeah, but the thing is, okay, here's what really bugs me about the Welsh system, right? Which is, if the system that you're poaching your players from is breeding good talent, and the environment that they're in, giving them competitive rugby, allows them to thrive and become the player that they've become. Because let's face it, the Welsh system let down Josh Adams from start to finish. Only when he went to one of the worst teams in the Premiership did he become the absolute hero that he's now become. Why would you take them away from that? What would you gain from leaving Saracens and joining Ospreys? Nothing.
Good question.
I mean, you might have... Well, not anymore. I mean, you know, you used to get a house and all sorts, didn't you? you know, think about, like another club who does very, very well. Exeter. What would you gain by leaving Exeter and going to Dragons? I mean, Gloucester. Poor old Moriarty. Going from Gloucester to Dragons.
Yeah.
What a joke. What a farce.
Speaking of farces, Italy, nilled.
Yeah.
I had some hopes because JB's beloved Benetton have been going great guns for the last few years.
They had some elements of the team. You go, what a really good back row.
Yeah.
Stain, Negri, Pelledri.
I like the idea of Alan and Carlo Canna.
Canna looked all right in moments. You could see what Franco Smith was getting at.
You think, can those two unlock the potential you've got outside? Because they've always had some dangerous runners. They've got dangerous runners in this team. And the answer was, well, no, not really.
Now, before the game, Michael Checker was very, very adamant that Italy deserve their place where they are and they need to be given time. These questions are never going to go away until Italy start winning games. They seem to be going backwards. I know their domestic teams are getting better.
Their under-20s team is getting better.
Their under-20s team beat Wales on Friday night and they seem to be getting better. How much longer can they last without this coming into sharp focus if they keep losing in the manner that they're losing, not just losing? Because Scotland lose a lot.
And how much of it will actually become a money issue? As in, this was not a good game to watch. As a neutral, this was a bloody awful. If you're a Wales fan, you will have enjoyed this because it's a 42-point win.
I don't even know. I think even some Wales fans would have found it a bit of a struggle.
As a neutral, I was close to turning off a few points. It was just
as you both aware, I'm very neutral, and I just thought it was a walkover, frankly.
Yeah. So how often, how long before another team might bring in bigger revenues, and it becomes a commercial decision?
I'm not sure a team will bring in bigger revenues because. Pro 14 do this little calculation and it's hilarious. And they did it before South Africa. They say what their domestic market is worth. So they came up with this enormous number. You go, what? There's no way that your domestic market and the population that you've broadcast to is that large. And that's because they include Italy. And Italy is actually a bloody big country, both economically and population-wise, particularly compared to Ireland, Scotland, and Wales. Yeah. It's enormous. It's probably as big as all three of them, plus, I mean, it could be double that.
Maybe they estimate
it's
value
more than that.
Maybe
in terms of population.
Maybe they got PwC to estimate the value.
100% out.
By the way, Maro Itoje's image rights took a tumble in value, and presumably that means, I think Phil, you pointed out on the WhatsApp group that potentially Maro Itoje having such a poor game, his image rights are devalued, meaning that Saracens paid even more over the odds for it. So they might be due another fine and another points deduction this week as a result.
Yeah, if they had opened up the books, if there was forensic analysis on the past years, this performance from Maro might have cost Nigel Ray another £500,000.
Exactly. Well, did anyone bother reading my op-ed this week about Saracens?
Yes.
In Rugby Pass?
Yes.
Yes, I did.
Very interesting. JB,
it was just me purely speculating with no substance whatsoever, and I'm very open on this. I just made it up what I might do if I was Nigel Ray, or how I might go about gaming the system further. Well, gaming the system further, but you know, making things work to my advantage. However you want to phrase it.
Yeah,
and that's what I mentioned. So for the past week now, I have been thinking about what could Saracens do with their spare time. And actually, maybe Saracen's spare time should be a hashtag. You can send us your suggestions for what Saracens should do with spare time. What do you think about this? Saracens playing a rugby league game, maybe for a charity, maybe for Rob Burrow, maybe something like that, against Wigan.
That'd be pretty cool.
That'd be very cool.
A half and half game.
I love that Bath Wigan one back in the day.
Yeah.
Well, we can't do half and half. I've had a good thing about this. We can't do half and half because when we did the Bath Wigan one, I say we, when they did the Bath Wigan one, the rugby league guys were professional, and the Bath guys, well, they were. So when the Bath guys were wrecking out the rugby league guys, it didn't really matter. You know, they were all the same size. But now rugby league, they couldn't possibly go into rucks against rugby union boys.
They'd have to play rugby league. Dangerous.
You have to play a whole game of rugby league. And the law variation, I thought about this. Do you know what they're going to have to do for the law variation? They're going to have to go full MLR,
Major League
and have
rugby.
A stripe across the top to keep the shots down. Because can you imagine Owen Farrell or Maro Itoje being written off with a high shot? The world would end.
World would end. And now, rugby league, I think the law about no arms tackles was changed a few years ago. I think.
Yeah, it's gone.
The shoulder charge. I don't watch any rugby league now, but because that used to be absolutely brutal.
You watch the Super Bowl tonight. That is just the most reckless sport.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah, but it's allowed, so let the boys play.
Yeah, and haven't they got like 50 concussion boys on the roster for NFL?
Yeah, and there's hundreds more where they came from. There's hundreds more. All it is like identify your real key important talent, put a red vest on them in training, which means no one touches them. Change the laws of the game,
exactly.
That means anyone touches them, they get penalised.
Yep.
And there you go. So look after your high value talent. The rest is everyone's a concussion boy.
Yeah, I mean the rest of them have got about as much value to their teams as Bristol, squad members have to pack lamb.
He's rubbish. Worthless. He's rubbish. Got him for nothing.
Worthless.
Paying him peanuts.
Worthless.
Like, I mean, it won't be long in NFL the way it's going that basically there'll be, like, on the side of the pitch, there'll be masseurs and a spa for the quarterbacks and wide receivers. Maybe a running back if he's lucky. And everyone else, like horses have that bit of canvas put over them when they're dead at a race course. You just have that with some of the, with a linebacker under it.
So I'm saying Saracens versus Wigan. Owen Farrell. I mean, the Farrell connection's really cool. And yep, they've got loads of spare time. And they could play in Anfield.
Does the Tompkins, Joel Tompkins, does he still play? Or is he...
That's a great question.
A totally different
era.
Maybe
he does.
What about Sam?
I knew that...
I think Sam still does, doesn't he?
No, Sam plays for Dragons, right?
Oh, Dragons.
So I thought of an All-Stars team, because I've watched an All-Stars team with... Who's a big star in rugby league now? You've got Sonny Bill Williams.
Israel Folau.
Sam Tompkins.
Folau, yeah.
Oh, yeah, Israel Folau. So that'd be quality. But let's not talk about Israel Folau. He doesn't play Union. It's beyond our remit. Above our pay grade.
Joel Tompkins plays for Catalan Dragons as well.
Oh, does he?
Yeah.
There you go, then.
He's only 32. Get him back.
Bloody hell. Is that all he is?
He'll be having coffee with the... having coffee with the boys with Izzy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Do you want to... can I say that? No, I can't say that, so I won't.
No. Oh, my goodness, you've grown, JB.
No, I can't. I can't betray confidences. Right, that's enough Israel Folau chat. What are predictions for next week, boys?
Okay.
Well, okay, so let's get into the games. And England v Scotland, is that Murrayfield, isn't it? So
it is.
England on the road again. Six days, they're going from Paris to Edinburgh. What changes would you make, not will Eddie Jones make, what changes would you make to the England team?
Given that I would love to change the scrum half, but there isn't anyone. And it's problem, there's not that much young talent coming through because a lot of Premiership clubs have expensive foreign scrum halves. Nick White, Cobus Reinhardt, Faf de Klerk, Francois Houhard.
Houhard.
Who was Premiership scrum half of the month this year? Scrum half of the month this year. Scrum half of the month this month.
But you're right, it is this year as well because it's the only one in 2020. It was Will Cliff.
Yes.
Come on, do
who was that? Because maybe that guy should get a call up. That was.
It was Will Cliff. I wouldn't give Will Cliff a call up, much as I like the lad.
Well, I mean, look, he's literally better than all the other scrum halves this month. And there's some big names there. He's literally better than all... I was picked by Nick Mullins. And Nick Mullins watches a lot of rugby. So, I don't know what you're thinking, Phil.
Can we just look at the selection? And this is why it's not about picking a player that you might want to use in 4 years' time. It's about picking a player you can use right now. Let's just say, for argument's sake, and this is the same with the scrum half situation, but let's just say... George Ford is injured in training and can't play. Is Jacob Umanga seriously going on the bench?
Probably not.
Hang on. Kind of a different question then. Is he going to be... If they want a fly half, yes. I imagine they'll make do with a different type of bat, like a Devoto to cover or a Slade to cover. But you know, if the next fly half, I do actually believe, is Umanga, because it's not Zippers now.
Yeah, but why isn't it? And I'll go like this why with the scrum halves. It's like, so you brought Alex Mitchell in to have a look at, but Ben Spencer, Dan Robson, like one of the scrum halves gets injured, what do? They're going to bring someone from outside the squad in because they're not going to use Alex Mitchell. And it's the same with the fly half. I think if Ford or Farrell got injured...
They should absolutely go with Ben Spencer.
Umanga is not going onto the bench. He might then go, oh, Joe Simmons, what are you doing now? Why don't you come on into the squad? Or Marcus Smith.
Or
whatever it is. I just cannot understand this. And because I understand looking 4 years ahead, but win the next game. And now, like you say, his sort of options at nine are completely closed off. You can't. There is no different type of player.
It will be Ben Youngs again. The only thing he might change would be put Mitchell on the bench, but I don't think he will do that. So I don't think that will change. I do.
I think Spencer.
Sorry, go on.
Spencer for me is the guy who I would turn to. I mean, I'd turn to him anyway. I know he's not as electric as some of the other guys you mentioned in the Premiership, like Pfaff and whoever.
Cobus,
but I do think he is the best English scrum half at the moment. Dan Robson makes play. It's definitely. I know it's not Young. I know that for a fact. I've known that for a long, long time.
Yeah.
So that would definitely happen. And I tell you another one. He's so anonymous. We didn't even discuss him in the breakdown. He's so anonymous. He gets. He gets into. Facilities like a spy, and no one ever notices him. They never say his name. Jolly Yules. He can't play again.
Yeah.
That is done. I didn't even know he was on the field. Occasionally, it popped up with the guy whose face I didn't recognise. The reason I don't recognise him because he doesn't play that much for Bath. And here he is playing for England. And it's not as if England is short of locks.
I know, they've got loads. Launchbury, Cruis on the bench.
Jolly Yules is there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jolly Yules. I mean, sure he's a great lad and all the rest of it, and I'm sure he works very hard. And, with a bit more time, I'm sure he might be able to be considered as an international player. But he's not bloody George Crew.
Right. Yeah, so that is a change, yeah. I think. And you will see most likely Laws and Itoji.
Yes, with Crews on the bench.
With Crews on the bench, unless he decides he needs a tight headlock. No one ever mentions loose headlock out of interest. I was thinking about that today.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. It's like no one ever says. It's like in football. Or just generally when a footballer, rugby player on it or any sport with a ball kicks it, they always say, oh, it's a cultured left foot. No one ever has a cultured right foot.
Nope.
I'm not even convinced that a tight headlock is a thing. I think someone's made this up.
But
I don't know, because I played second row lots of times. I don't know if I'm a tight headlock or not. There again, I absolutely do know that James Phillips is a tight headlock.
Yes.
And so is Mitch Lees. Mitch Lees is a tight headlock, right?
And Ollie Cohn was a tight headlock.
100% a tight headlock, although I still don't think it's a thing.
And Backy's boat was a tight headlock.
But I bet if I look back at the tape, if I look back at the game tape for all their games, I bet they played on the loose head quite a lot, which then throws the theory into utter chaos.
So the changes I would make for England would be... I'd probably keep the front row as it is.
Unless Mako's back.
Unless Mako's back, yes. I would change the second row and it would be Itoji and probably Laws, although I do like George Cruz. He actually runs the line out, and for that I might have him in there.
Have I misunderstood this? I thought Mako was fit, but it was a special thing because he played so much rugby and he's back next week. I'm sure Eddie said something like that.
No, I think he had an eye injury. He wasn't considered.
Yeah, I thought there was an injury. Same because Anthony Watson as well was it a calf tweak? But
Cunderhill, and I'd have a different number eight.
But if on Mako, so I thought the scrum was one of the few things apart from the control at number eight.
Yeah.
Scrum was generally one of the few things that worked really well for England. It would be a shame to lose Marler, but I thought Genge, just his explosiveness and his work rate off the bench was brilliant, so I'd probably have Mako and Genge.
And his scrimmaging was good as well.
His scrimmaging was good. Really good. So, sorry, Tim, who do you have as your back row?
Yeah, so I'd probably, with the squad he's got, put Ben Earl at number eight.
And then keep
Cunderhill.
Yeah.
But
actually
what I would do would get someone in from outside the squad. And
who would you go for?
I think I would... I think I would go Dom Brandt. I think I would.
Really? Last week, but I just wonder if Dom Brandt's so good at reading the game and finding the gap. I wonder what he's going to do when there are no gaps.
Yeah, but with two workhorses, I think it frees that up.
So I am 99.9% certain he will not bring Dom Brandt.
Oh, no, he won't.
He won't bring him in. So I think the change is Earl or Ludlam will start in the back row. Yeah. I actually think Tom Curry will start in number eight.
And Earl, Underhill and Curry,
yeah,
they're not big. I like the dynamism.
And their energy.
Do you know the one guy they really miss? And he can't be far away from being fit now. He can't be.
Mark Wilson.
Yeah. I think Mark Wilson commands a place, a starting place in that front row immediately. Front row, back row, or front row.
He does, because his performance against South Africa.
Yes.
Last November 18 it was. He was superb and against the most physical pack in the world. So, yeah, I'd be very happy to see him back.
A different level of destructiveness to what he does. I mean, Underhill's amazing. But for some reason, I think maybe Wilson might go a step beyond that, and he can play at eight. So if you do really want that double seven thing going on, he has to be your man. Even if you want a triple seven thing going on.
Yeah.
I would keep George Ford at 10. I thought he was really good. For all of England's poor play, Johnny May and George Ford were both excellent.
There were times where I got a bit frustrated because he did, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 aimless kicks. Besides that, I agree. And he was working off some poor service.
Yeah.
Not entirely Ben Young's fault, because some of the ball from...
Did you notice Ben Young's basketball missed three into touch?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Did I notice it? Come on, Tim.
He got hooked off. It was straight after that, wasn't it? It was like, immediately, you are off. Get off that pitch. Oh, God.
Yeah. It is like the guy... that was like watching a guy who was in a karaoke bar who thought he could replicate the professional singer who'd just been on. Ben Youngs is watching DuPont and thought, oh, well, DuPont can do it, I can do it. No, Ben, no, you can't. Stay in your box.
Right, as for England's back three, which is the only other... As for England's back three, which is really the only big topic of conversation, because we'll wait and see if Manu's fit and all the rest of it. But if everybody was fit, everybody, Jack Noel and Anthony Watson...
Yeah.
And all the other players that are already in the squad, who's your England back three?
May.
Probably back to the World Cup position. Probably.
I don't...
May, Watson, Daly.
Yeah.
With who at 15?
But maybe swap Watson and Daly round.
I think that's what we would have done this weekend.
Potentially.
Yeah, I think Daly's days at fullback are done. I think that's over now. I don't know about Furbank. He had a bad game. There's no two ways about it. And I don't really know what he does well. That said, I feel that he needs another shot.
Yeah. I wonder if he'll get one against Italy.
I don't know why.
Yeah. If Watson's fit, Watson plays.
Yeah.
And I would play him fullback and switch Daly out of the three. But if Noel was fit as well, then I'd think about potentially dropping Daly and having Noel, May, Watson.
Yeah, I could go with that.
I would definitely May, and then Watson over Daly. I think Daly's like an absolutely fine player. Like if you can play him, you can't. I'm not bothered if he plays or not. He'll fine.
Well, but I'd potentially think about him as a. I'd potentially think about him as a 13, but
who Daly
potentially? But I think Jonathan Joseph is a different level of 13 to basically anyone. If you use Jonathan Joseph in the right way. I include Manu in that too.
Yeah, I do.
Manu and Joseph are as good as each other at different things. They can't do what each other do. But if you use them right, fine.
If everyone's fit in the centres, I think it'll be Tuilagi Slade outside Farrell. But anyway, that's another conversation. None of these guys are fit. I was just interested. England are going to get a rocket. That will hurt. There's things that they can put right that they need to put right. Attitude and basics.
Trying hard.
Right there.
Yeah, look after the pill.
Look after the ball.
The old classic. Simple.
But then Scotland are in exactly the same boat.
They are.
Keep the ball when you're in the attacking third. Come away with points.
Yeah.
Hang on. It's not Scotland-England next week, is it?
Yeah. It is.
Oh, my word. I mean, it's not traditionally been one of my favourite games because it's always been so one-sided. But after last year's, my God.
Yeah.
And after yesterday's two games as well, it looks like we're in for some fireworks.
Yeah, because I said it before, but the failures from both teams were eerily similar in this weekend.
They were.
So
where do you think Finn Russell will have watched the game?
Will he have watched the game?
Will he have watched it?
Don't know. Is he in Dubai?
I think.
I don't know. I don't think he's still in Dubai.
Let's try and locate him.
No, so two questions here. Did Finn Russell watch the game? Yes. Was Finn Russell able to pay attention to the game? I'm not sure that is something which he would... I mean, I, assuming, like me yesterday watching the game, he would have enjoyed a beverage or two.
Perhaps.
So, yeah, I think he watched it because he's a good bloke, and I think everyone likes him in that squad. He likes everyone else. I wouldn't be surprised if he had the occasional beer to accompany his viewing pleasure, unless he was playing.
It's Saturday night. You've got to have a couple.
Exactly. In Paris or Dubai.
Well, I'd love to see him back against England. Maybe. Have another week off, Finn.
Maybe.
Although Adam Hastings played really well.
Adam Hastings, whatever was written on the back of his hand,
yeah,
it worked well.
They were moves, actually. I watched the Ireland-Scotland game. I was in a room with Jim Hamilton, among other people, who knew some of the moves.
Oh, really?
On that were written on Adam Hastings' hand, and he said, "Mickey and Mouse are kickoffs."
Okay.
And
are you giving away trade secrets here, Tim?
Well, I'm just passing on trade secrets that were given willingly. So that's just tough. And they were broadcast willingly as well.
Okay.
So that's fine.
Perfect.
So I'm not breaking news here.
Yeah.
Mickey and Mouse. BDO was the other one. I don't know whether Adam Hastings is just a fan of darts, but there was another one written on his hand that was BDO. So anyway.
I wonder which of Scotland players will have F. Ben Youngs written on their on their arm.
Oh, yeah.
F it B-Y.
Was it?
F it B-Y. F it B-Y. And what did we think what did we think George Ford meant when he had F it B-Y on his...
Back yourself.
Back yourself.
F it, I'm sure it's F it Ben Youngs. I bet he was saying that.
See, I understand moves written on your hand.
It
was quite weird to see, but I understand moves being written on your hand. Like you see quarterbacks with that little thing on their forearm, play sheet and stuff. But to have F it BY on you, do you really need to remember F it, back yourself?
Back yourself. He's gotten too much into mindfulness and spiritualism.
What is it I need to do again? Oh, yeah, I backed myself.
Exactly.
I was about to ask to be substituted then, but I looked down at my wrist.
Well, or like you're trying to, you're 13 and you're trying to make the outside break round the other outside centre. I think, what do I do? Oh, yeah, I've written it down here. Back yourself. I can't imagine when it'd be useful. So here's the biggest question. How much of a head start do England want this year?
More than 31 points.
Yeah. Oh my god! What a get. So 32 points in your home and dry, right?
Yeah,
we've got to be 32 points up at half time, and then it's plain sailing.
Yeah, there you go. Scotland win.
England by 6.
I'm nervous.
I am very nervous.
I was fairly confident going into the France game. I'm nervous now. I think England will do it.
Yeah, we need to get. We could do with designing a hashtag if they lose this.
Do you want to put it on the whiteboard?
Having predicted
an England win in Paris, do you now want to reverse and call downfall 2020?
Well, now I've seen what they're bringing. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens this weekend.
Do you remember when Downfall 2019 was being called and England were looking really bad and they were on a really bad run? It was when they didn't have Billy Vunipola.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. True, actually.
It's when Billy Vunipola broke his arm.
Again.
But they also had Billy... Didn't they have Billy when they lost to France last time? So 2 years ago now, 2018.
No, I don't think they did.
The original year of the downfall, when a really bad France team just melted England everywhere.
Phil will look it up. I seem to remember him having a broken arm, and that's when he was out.
Or did he? Did he not come? Was that? It might have been his first game back. I seem to have in my head.
I think it might have been, you know, and they rushed him back too early, in my opinion.
Yeah. Let's have a look. No, he didn't play. It was Hughes.
Take it back then. I tell you who it was. Was it not Tom Simmons? Tom Simmons at seven then?
No,
that was Italy.
So Simmons...
And he scored a hat-trick.
Yeah, Simmons played earlier on in the tournament and then got found out at the time. Simmons was on the bench in this game and he came on for Hughes. Oh, actually...
Yeah.
So he came on for Hughes after 24 minutes.
I remember watching a lot of him.
Yeah. And this was the game that England were just under power, just could not get over the line, could not get over the game line.
Yeah. So there you go. England have seem very, very reliant on one man. All the more reason to just roll the dice on someone else that could potentially fill that void. But just one thing I forgot to mention earlier in relation to the England France game is I love it and hate it, and I love to hate it. The French TV directors.
Oh God.
And their...
I love it.
I love the slow-mo, the gratuitous use of slow-mo. I love that when Ellis Genge puts in a legitimate tackle just after Entomac kicks it, the director manages to whip the whole of the stadium into
it?
A calling for a yellow or red card frenzy.
I thought Nigel Owens handled that really well.
Nigel Owens is one of the few things he handled very well in that game. He just said play on, but that didn't stop the director from going, let's have another replay, give me another angle. But I mean, even if there was nothing but handbags, if there's a massive fight, I want to see a massive fight. So, but the director mysteriously had no angles of any fight after the try.
I love that, you know. You know how much respect I have for the referees. I think the referees are bloody brilliant for 99% of the time. But there's a certain pomposity that they have when they are demanding different angles from directors. I love the fact that there's a director who's not part of any union, doesn't answer to anyone but the TV company, says, no.
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 Just on Owens and the replays, the Olivon's first try, where Laws and Olivon both go up for the ball, it falls to Rates, and Johnny May stupidly switches off. He could have made that tackle. But having watched the replay, so I think it either hits Olivon's arm first time around.
Oh, it does.
Or I'm certain it hits his shoulder and bounces forward, and Rates is in front of him.
The TMO said, oh no, that definitely came off a white hand. Yeah, white hand touches that. And even as he's seeing Olivon hand push touching the ball, he's saying, yep, see, that's a white hand. It's, what? What you were looking at? But actually, I think he hit it backwards anyway.
It comes off his shoulder.
Does it?
I'm certain that the last touch is it off because it hits.
I watched this thing without any audio, so I didn't hear any of the deliberations. And watching it, I was astonished that was given as a try.
Yeah, yeah.
I was speaking loudly and obnoxiously with quite some confidence in the ski bar. I can tell you, I've seen many of these decisions. Many that is never a try. Nobody worry.
Yeah,
it was a try.
Yeah. I was a bit surprised, but Eddie Jones in his press conference said, look, if we concede a try and it shouldn't have been a try, we shake our heads and we get on with it. If we concede a try and it is a try, we shake our heads and we get on with it.
But
so it doesn't matter to us.
The way they reacted to it, as in they just switched off. But
at that moment in time, Johnny May and others switched off totally. Yeah,
totally.
And the French didn't. And that's just another example of the French players just being sharper mentally and physically. When there was some kind of confusion or someone spills the ball, they always reacted better.
Mm. I thought the officiating generally over the weekend, just if I was grading it, it would be about like a C minus. I thought it was really quite poor.
The Ireland Scotland game was frustrating because it felt like there was loads of unnecessary technical infringements around the ruck that had no impact on the game that were given that stopped play continuing, and there were some big high shots that were not given. Hamish Watson, Bundy Aki, to name a couple.
And compare that to Nige refereeing the ruck, which is just like, do what you want. I'm just not going to pay any attention to any of it.
Crack on.
If you want to be offside, as long as you're not really offside, you can be a bit offside, then we'll let that go.
Yeah, hands in, all over the place. Yeah. Carry on. Again, France dealt with that a little bit better.
They did.
They played the referee much better than England did. Mm. Tim, did you give a prediction? You did.
England by six.
Yeah, England maybe by three. The other games, so 2:15 on Saturday, we've got Ireland hosting Wales.
Oh, that's a tasty game, that.
After last year's absolute beatdown of Ireland for the Grand Slam for Wales, it's got some spice to it.
Yeah, purely because Andy Farrell looks so good. I'm going to go for an Ireland to win by five. I think Pivac. I hope he picks Nick Tompkins.
Yeah, agreed.
And other than that, kind of as you were, I think Reece Webb does not look great. If Gareth Davis is back, I also think he'll struggle to get a starting spot because Tomos Williams looks awesome.
Yeah, he was good. Again, against Italy.
Against Italy, yeah.
Yeah.
Caveat.
I'll tell you who impressed me coming off the bench. I thought Leon Brown carried really well when he came off the bench. But good bit of spark. So he might be pushing for a start, but other than that, no, crack on. I think Ireland will win at home, though. I think they've got enough.
Yeah. And they'll play better as well. They will, because they were not at their best.
Yes.
How do you see that one going, Jay?
Well, I'm still not convinced that the Pivac is going to be success. But given what we've seen on Saturday, it didn't look too bad. And Ireland did look stale. I think there's just enough residual Gatland hangover to get Wales over the line. Give me Wales.
Okay. And then Sunday, we've got France at home again, hosting Italy. Which, if the two teams' performances this weekend are anything to go by, that could be 50 points.
Beat down.
Now, I really, really hope Italy correct a few of their errors, get some more cohesiveness across their team with some new players, new combination, certainly. And I hope it's a good game. I hope it's at least a good performance from Italy.
Mm.
But I'm not so sure. Yeah, that could be painful. And that's it.
And there's also... Are you going to be at Sale Sharks Friday night, JB?
Do you know what? I'll be on a major betting company's website because it'll be televised. Oh, actually, no, it will be televised. Won't it?
It's on BT Sport.
BT Sport.
It's a semi-final.
Premiership Rugby Cup semi-final to face Harlequins in the final, who beat Exeter at Sandy Park quite comfortably.
Sadly, I'm skiing. And I have, if it's possible, I would definitely, I'd love to go and watch Saracens play rugby. So, there's not that many times I can watch them up in the AJ Bell now before they go down. So I'd love to go and watch. But if you do want to go to the AJ Bell next Friday, do you know what they're giving away, Tim?
I do. Does Phil know?
I do know. I do know.
Exactly.
Of all the things to convince me to go to a rugby game.
Premiership Rugby Cup rugby game.
A Premiership Rugby Cup rugby game.
On a Friday night with all the traffic going over Friday the Barton night. Bridge.
Yeah.
If I could fly back from skiing, I would. I actually would.
So I know.
If you want a free glow stick,
free glow sticks, Jay. I think you get two, one for each hand.
Do you?
I mean, the
party at the AJ Bell only gets better. So I would say, if you're at a loose end, for two reasons. One, go and see one of the best club teams of all time.
Get on with it, come on.
of all time, Sale Sharks play Saracens, because we're not going to see Saracens for that much longer. And also, go get yourself a glow stick, and it'll be a great day out. So there you go.
Alternatively, go
night, AJ Bell.
Go to Poundland, get a whole pack of glow sticks, and sit and watch it on BT Sport if that's what you wanted to do as well.
So, Jay, I'm actually disappointed.
I don't know. So that,
Jay, I'm very disappointed. I'm disappointed in your commitment to Sale Sharks, because
I'm a neutral. If it was around, I would go watch the Saracens game. Yeah.
So, I know a chap who's a big Liverpool fan. Worked with a chap who's a big Liverpool fan. He was on a family holiday in Barcelona or northern Spain when Liverpool were playing at home in the, I think it was Champions League quarter-final, and he got a 4 p.m. flight from Barcelona to Liverpool, watched the game, and then got a 5 a.m. flight the next morning back to Barcelona to continue his family holiday. So I'm surprised.
I think that's so sad.
I'm surprised you're not showing that same commitment to your beloved Sale Sharks.
But I mean, as you well know, Phil, I'm strictly a neutral. I'm strictly a neutral. So now I'll have to continue on my ski holiday. Sadly, that's outrageous. So your friend is outrageous. I think that's actually quite sad.
It's commitment, mate.
Yeah.
Right.
I reckon Sale will win that and then win the Premiership Cup. So there you go.
The one final thing to very briefly mention is that we may well have a new team that we are adopting on the podcast after in Austin, Texas, they announced their Major League Rugby team is changing its name from the Austin Herd to the Austin Gilgroni, which is a new cocktail based on the Negroni but using tequila. This is a thing. Now we must have had something to do with this. It's too much of a coincidence. It's too much of a coincidence.
I completely agree. There's no way they've in. Yeah, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong. Great minds think alike, and all that. But there's no way there's a mind as great as our combined three living in Texas or anywhere for that matter.
I love it. So there we go.
Yeah, I'd love to go to Austin, Texas.
I would.
And have some Gilbronis.
Texas is on my list. I really want to go to Texas. Generally, do you know there are more? There are more tigers in Texas per square mile than anywhere else in the world.
And Texas is a big place.
Because people have them as pets. that is Texas in a nutshell.
Ugh.
What a country. What a time to be alive.
Right. JB, go enjoy your ski holiday, mate.
All right, mate. I shall see you both the next weekend.
Let the boys play.
The boys play.
Right, we're at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. Hit subscribe in that feed because we'll have more podcasts coming your way very soon. Nice one, Phil.
Thank you, Tim.
See you next time. Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.